Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
So living in Rialto, America, London, even Japan, my next guest has seen how Western standards of beauty control women. Her new book, Disobedient Bodies, is an essay suggesting a better way. Emma Dabari, let me get that right. Thanks for joining me and sorry for absolutely messing up your name there. How are you?
It's grand. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Listen, well, you got it right.
You actually got it right.
Dabari, right? Dabari. Do you know how many times I've said that this morning because it's felt so funny? But listen, you're very welcome and thank you for joining me. Come here, the book, it's amazing. But what is the motivation behind it?
Well, thank you, first of all. And then secondly, I was just like, you know, I was like, trying to understand why not just myself, but most women I know have currently or at some point in their lives, you know, just felt a really like deep seated sense of like a self-loathing about their body or about their appearance, irrespective of what they actually look like. And, you know, we're told that it's because of unrealistic beauty standards and like the advertising industry, and those things are not without kind of influence, but I was just like, there's something more going on, and it was really me trying to get to like kind of get to the root of that and try and come up with ideas, suggestions and solutions about how we could, you know, actually enjoy the experience of our bodies, having bodies. So yeah, that was the motivation.
You talk about loads of different things. Can we talk about the idea of pretty privilege that you mentioned in the book? And why is it more complex than many of us might think it is?
I think everything that is discussed, any topic that has kind of found its genesis or like, you know, is widely discussed on social media is usually more complex than the discourse on social media allows for it to be. Mm-hmm. So that's a phrase that, you know, we see a lot on social media. And I'm really not trying to say that the way you look is immaterial to the treatment or to the experiences that you will have. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that pretty privilege kind of assumes that the goal is to just be pretty. And then if you are perceived as being pretty or you're perceived as possessing beauty, then you will have all of these good things will happen to you. And I kind of wanted to disrupt that idea that physical beauty is the primary goal to aspire to look at even women who are seen as, you know, possessing beauty. I use examples of women, you know, who are like kind of like A-listers. There's a global consensus that these women are beautiful. And I look at some of like the experiences that they, you know, that they have had and what their beauty has gotten for them. And it's like, so basically, sorry, it's a bit complicated, but I'm trying to say that I guess what most people want in life, I assume this is universal, is to be loved, is to feel supported, is to feel a sense of security. And as women, we've been told that being pretty or being beautiful is what we've been conditioned to believe that we need to be pretty or beautiful to kind of get those things. And we assume that if we are, then those things will necessarily follow. I use examples of women who are considered beautiful, where those things have not necessarily been what they've gotten as a result. So my idea is like to try, why don't we try and like build a world or organize societies whereby everybody has love and security and support. And the idea of physical beauty isn't the price that women have to pay to think that they deserve those things or to have access to those things. So that's what I'm trying to get to with that part about pretty privilege.
Are you positive, or it's the wrong word, are you hopeful that this will happen in the future? Or
one
we can do it?
One of the things that gives me hope is I looked to other kind of times and places for examples of where beauty had been understood very, very differently to the way we understand it now, where beauty wasn't necessarily seen as primarily, sorry, I have an earring that's like clattering against the phone. Where beauty wasn't seen as something that was primarily physical or visual, where beauty was understood as beauty could be understood in what somebody did rather than like what they looked like. And because there's quite concrete examples of where beauty was seen as kind of like relational rather than purely physical and like really, really associated with women, it is possible because it has been. I think like where we are now, we're really like in the grip of a particular understanding of beauty that is quite oppressive and is quite tyrannical. I was just home. I've just left Dublin and I was listening to the radio and they were saying that the incidence of eating disorders in Ireland last year was like the highest it's ever been, I think, since like records, since they've been recording mm-hmm. it. So it really showed, like, so I write a lot in the book about like growing up in the 90s and the kind of the intense pressure to be extremely skinny, really more so than anywhere else that I've lived. I'm not saying that pressure isn't, you know, global and isn't in lots of places, but the weight of it, like, pardon the pun, but like the weight of it in Ireland was like really, really intense. And so I thought that was really depressing to hear that like eating disorders are, you know, even higher now than they would have been then, when it seemed like kind of all of my friends, myself included, had kind of like disordered eating. So I think we are really in the grip of, beauty standards that are kind of like all consuming and quite tyrannical and quite painful for a lot of people. And I think the solutions that we're given. So one of the things I talk about in the book is this idea that we're told that if we just make beauty standards like more diverse, mm-hmm. if there's like more kind of representation, that's kind of the solution to the oppressive nature, what can be the oppressive nature of it. And I was thinking about that a lot. And I was just like, while diversity and representation are in no way bad things, I'm not like, no, we shouldn't have more of that. They don't get to the root of the problem, because if they did, women that are very well represented, let's say slim white women with straight hair, are represented well, like in society. If representation was the key, or in beauty standards, let's say, if representation was the key, women that fit that criteria would feel great about themselves. And most of them don't.
That's not true. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
So what we, in Western culture, in Western discourse, there is, and I go into like kind of philosophy and religion and kind of where these ideas about, where our ideas in the West about the body really come from. And there is this deep-seated kind of contempt in which the body is held in Western philosophy that can be like traced back to Plato, with the separation of the body and the mind, and the mind being seen as like superior, the body being seen as inferior, the body being understood as a site that needs to be controlled by the will and the discipline of the mind, and the mind is the place, you know, of this kind of like lofty cerebral intellectual pursuit. Within that distinction between like the body and the mind, men came to be associated with the mind. So it's men that are scientific, it's men that are like, you know, rational. And women and racialized people came to be associated with the body and with embodiment. And so that kind of hierarchy and that inferiority that's associated with being embodied is then like transferred to women and people who are racialized. So this idea of the body being something that is, you know, there's a quote I use in the book from like Saint Augustine, where the body is understood as like, you know, the slimy desires of the flesh, where the body is seen as this thing that's like a bit gross and needs to be disciplined and controlled. That is a deep-seated tenet in kind of Western discourse. So if we just make beauty, if we just make our current beauty culture more diverse, all we are doing is adding more bodies into the mix. But it's a framework that already sees the body in this kind of like, in this complicated way. So I wanted to look at cultures that had different philosophical and spiritual traditions, where there wasn't this distinction between the body and the mind, and the body wasn't kind of seen as inferior to the mind, and in what way that, and to think about what way that would impact our relationships to our bodies, and as a result, kind of our beauty cultures. So yeah, that's what the book is going into.
There's a really interesting bit about Halloween, and obviously we're coming up to Halloween. about witches and how the concept of a witch hunt was a major power and social status grab. Can you explain how and why that happened?
Yeah, so I'm looking at the enclosures. I'm looking at colonialism and the enclosures and the witch trials. So, excuse me, I can't think of the figure off the top of my head, but thousands and thousands. I think it's like 60,000, like thousands of women were murdered, like during the time of the witch hunts, which is over like a period of kind of a few hundred years. But I hadn't expected, like I hadn't planned to write about witches. That wasn't like, it's interesting the kind of direction the research takes you into, mm-hmm. but it was like really fascinating to see that like on during the transition to capitalism, when all of this land in England, actually in England, was being this common land that everybody would have had access to sustain themselves and to live off, was being enclosed by the aristocracy just before they came and colonized Ireland, and from there, you know, went and colonized a large proportion of the rest of the world. They were enclosing the land in England at this time of making into private property, making the commons into private property to, you know, consolidate their wealth. This is during the transition to capitalism. At the same time, you have the witch hunts happening. So I was really fascinated by this idea that the type of patriarchy that we currently live under is has been kind of consistent and universal, and that it's always been thus. That's actually not the case. There's many historical periods where in certain ways women had more freedom, autonomy and power than they've had certainly until very recently. And during this historical period that I'm talking about, there were women that, you know, there were spheres where women had kind of like power and autonomy and influence. And there were women who were like healers and often midwives and doctors and had this great knowledge of the land and what the land, you know, produced and plants and medicine. And it's many of those women who were branded as witches because their knowledge and their power was a threat to through the status quo. And as this kind of like overlaps with the enclosures, people were also being kicked off the land, and a lot of these women had like a deep relationship to the land. So you also have in this period of the land being made into private property, the nature of marriage changing and women becoming increasingly dependent on husbands as wage earners, and this relationship and access to the land that they previously had being diminished. Women's roles in society in this period being diminished, being circumscribed. The kind of power and knowledge that women had possessed, them being, you know, attacked for having, and being, this is a very whistle-stop history because it's all over a period of time, mm-hmm. and quite complicated, but those women, you know, kind of being branded as witches often, being murdered, and women being reimagined as wives, dependents of their husbands, and increasingly being, you know, seen as these kind of anxiously decorative appendages, you know, this kind of movement into I guess eventually kind of like trophy wives, and just how the status of women, you know, was really, really like impacted by a lot of these historical processes.
It's a fascinating read. It's called Disobedient Bodies. You're in London now? You're in London now?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You're in London now. Well, you're at an exhibition launch, is that right?
Yes. So the book was published as part of an exhibition called The Cult of Beauty, which is with the Wellcome Collection. And so their official opening is tomorrow night. And it is, well, looking at the cult of beauty, but like the book, it's looking at beauty from quite unexpected kind of angles so that we can try and reimagine beauty culture and conceive of it differently. The exhibition, quite much like my book, is kind of looking at binaries and how we can how we can maybe look at the world in a way that is less binary and more holistic and reimagine our beauty culture kind of through that.
Well, listen, amazing to be there. What a fantastic book it is as well. Best of luck with the book and thank you for joining us on the show today.
You're so welcome. Thanks
bye,
for having me.
Emma, bye. There we go. That is Emma Dabberies and her new book is Disobedient Bodies. It is out now and we'll be back after this.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.